Good morning, and thanks for letting me share my thoughts by video this morning. Just got back last night late from Ohio, where we mingled with lots of people at Irene's mother's funeral. So I'll stay home, close to home, for a couple days to be safe. John 3 is a favorite gospel text for many Christians, partly because of the often memorized John 3:16 that assures us of God's love for the whole world and God's desire that we flourish rather than perish and have everlasting life. It's also known for introducing a beautiful and complex metaphor, that of being born again, or born from above. And yes, this rich metaphor has sadly been cheapened by making it a mere adjective and creating a category of Christian, as in born-again Christian. Using it as an adjective to create a category of people makes this metaphor lose its punch, it seems to me. It's like turning the Mona Lisa into a mass-produced paint-by-number kit. The metaphor of rebirth is complicated, beautiful, very messy, and full of truth. The very last sermon I preached to a full sanctuary at Parkview the Sunday before the country shut down for COVID was on March 8, 2020, and it was on this same text from John 3. So this time, instead of holding forth for 15 minutes myself, I'll give a 2-minute refresher, and then 4 other people in the congregation will tell a personal story, a testimony, if you will, of rebirth. Here's what I said that Sunday in a few words. When the Pharisee Nicodemus came to Jesus in the night, Jesus challenged him to take a step toward life. He used the metaphor of rebirth to describe a process of transformation that he was inviting Nicodemus to consider. It's a great metaphor, because whether it's our first physical birth or a later figurative rebirth, being born is no picnic. It's excruciating. It's hazardous. It's messy. It's utterly life-changing. It's letting go of the old, of the status quo life, and moving into a new and reordered life. I'm guessing Nicodemus already had a hunch this was the case because he came to Jesus by night. I guess it was safer that way. I doubt he was ready for the excruciating trip from womb to world. Yet he was fascinated by Jesus' invitation. We aren't told how he responded to Jesus. There's only speculation. Maybe Nicodemus became a disciple of Jesus. Or maybe he lived the rest of his life as a curious and sympathetic Pharisee and nothing more, because he lacked the courage to open himself to rebirth. He may not have had the will to submit himself to the risk, trauma, vulnerabilities, and indignities of birth, and then to enter into a new way of life. I imagine if we all sat with that metaphor for a little while, we could think of times in our lives, multiple times, probably, when we were invited to be reborn from womb to new life. Sometimes we might have been ready, sometimes not. And perhaps that's where some of us are right now, struggling with that invitation to rebirth. So I asked 4 persons this question. Tell about a time in your life when you can say, in retrospect, that God invited you to let go of something that felt like a warm, secure, comfortable space and enter into something new that felt perhaps threatening, unsafe, or risky at the time, but turned out to be transformative and life-giving for you. We'll hear first from one of our remote congregants, Greta Owen, who lives with her family in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, and then from 3 local attenders in this order: Vernon Jancy, Anita McCracken, and Saloma Furlong. So, Greta?
6 years ago, I began to wonder about a call to vocational ministry. At the time, I was active as a lay leader in our local congregation, and my gifts in ministry were named and affirmed. This felt confusing and risky to step into, I had three young children, and despite that for a decade I had been part of a congregation that affirmed women in pastoral leadership, I knew both my husband's and my own families of origin did not hold this same view. The Mennonite church I was raised in wrestled with this during my adolescent years, and ultimately voted against the possibility of women being called to lead as pastors. So my first encounter with this was in the context of conflict. It's one thing to change your own theology in your head, quite another to act on it. Our church here in Pennsylvania has at times been a place to explore these gifts, but it has also been a place of steady and many times difficult transitions of leadership, staff, and church members. The question lays unresolved. Do I need to move on from this local body in order to pursue this calling? And if so, what denomination do I even belong to? How do I figure out what the next steps are when I'm educating and mothering our own four children? How can I even be sure that this is a birth story at all, one that results in transformation and life? I realized in reflection on the birth metaphor that I need not look far. My own body has been the birthing vessel for four human beings, and none of their birth stories followed the same path. Our boys arrived well before they were expected. Labor was long, exhausting, and at the end of our second son's birth, frightening. With our first daughter, a day and night of irregular, intermittent contractions preceded labor, preventing me from getting too comfortable. Everything was about to change, yet no real progress was being made. And our fourth child, following three older siblings who couldn't even make it to their due dates, waited 12 days past her due date to make her appearance. I wondered if I had somehow missed the opportunity to have this baby at all. Would there ever be a birth? And so I see in my own wrestling with vocational call the elements of a birth story. It's long, exhausting, at times frightening and messy, uncomfortable, but with no real or recognizable results. Sometimes I wonder, have I missed the opportunity for transformation altogether? And so in this, I hold on to hope. These are the things birth stories are made of. One day I will tell my own story in retrospect. For now, I continue to wonder, lean into God's invitation, and muddle through the messy middle.
I would entitle what I have to say, Pivoting Towards Transformation, or Pivoting in Transformation. After graduation from EMC in those days, in 1962 and 64, Dorothy and I spent 6 years in Central America working at development and adult literacy programs in Costa Rica and Nicaragua. As a result of those 6 years of work, when it became apparent that we needed to pivot for me to get more education if we were going to continue in this, I decided to apply to Cornell University, among others, and was granted a scholarship package that covered 5 years of my PhD work totally, with zero debt when I got out. during that time that I was doing my dissertation, my PhD work, I did a dissertation on Costa Rica and the development issues in northern Costa Rica and where to place roads and different institutions to develop that region. And I use the term development knowing that it's very, very loaded. As a result of that work, it became apparent that I would be overqualified to work at the things that I wanted to prepare to work in. And so I had to pivot from a desire to work at the grassroots to work more in what became apparent to be academia. So during the last phase of my dissertation, I committed to work with a major university as their Latin American specialist on development. However, as often happens, soon after I committed myself to that position, EMU called and said, we desperately need somebody to replace the sociologist who has left to work with MCC, doing exactly the kind of thing I wanted to do. So Dot and I considered for a while and said, well, we have no debt. We can afford to work at EMU. And so we came, and here we are. During my years at EMU, I continued to relate to Latin America and particularly Costa Rica, and took a sabbatical to do a major research on management problems in war zones during the war years in Central America. And then also spent a year later working with the Costa Rican government on land reform issues. It was during that time, in one of my meetings with the regular meetings with the president, President Carrasco, he said, look, you are a Mennonite and you know something about peace. And I'm working on starting the UN University for Peace in Costa Rica, and I would like you to spend less time on land reform and join Francisco Barahona in writing the first curriculum for the University for Peace. So I did. And as a result of that pivot, I became very interested in peace as a professional area. And so I combined peace and development in my focus, and eventually was able to team with John Paul Lederach here at EMU to not only experience personal transformation, but to transform, I would say, to some degree, the university through the Center for Justice and Peacebuilding, which has emerged. So my pivot is a major pivot towards peace, which I was already inclined towards, but it also affected not only me, but the larger institution into which I had committed myself to work.
My January 2019 journal records a sense of upcoming transition. Work, home, both. My Kutza Store family and I had spent months finding that house. And after 5 years of hard work, I only had a good start towards returning that half acre to its native state. The neighbors were both friends and neighborhood watch. Was I really going to leave all that? July came, and with it a stubborn illness. Yard care and home care just didn't happen. The furnace was kaput, and the water heater and pump threatened to follow suit. Transition called louder. I asked kids and friends for counsel. Returning from Kutz's one evening, a piece of land caught my eye. Ridiculous. How could I even think of managing 2 acres when I couldn't handle a half? But I took a look-see. And up on that hilltop, my lungs opened up. I could breathe up there. Breezes and winds cleared most of the air. Rings of eastern red cedar filtered the rest. The land, formerly pasture land, was already 10 years into its return to its native state. It just needed encouragement. I envisioned a place for both wildlife and domestic life. The transition was not easy. My house sold in just 3 days. Fortunately, friends and family provided temporary housing. The needed loan came through. Unfortunately, March 2020, I found myself jobless. And then, as you know, we all isolated from COVID. Anxiety spoke loudly at times, but I remembered the counsel from my friends and kids who had helped spy out the land and dream dreams. Many seemingly impossible needs resolved relatively quickly. I had to believe that the rest would too. In July 2020, just a year and a half after that first sense of upcoming transition, I moved into a 746 square foot log cabin that the kids and I had designed together. The cabin is perfect for watercolor and pencil sketching, for my new work from home job, and for balancing both cocooning and community. My un-kitchen, a story for another day, provides a safe food prep space, even when brain fog from allergy reactions makes it hard to think. Critters and birds are moving in. Friends, family have come to visit outdoors on porches I didn't even have in my old house. I can't imagine navigating COVID from anywhere else. I can't imagine being anywhere else.
I love this passage in John 3 that is so full of vivid imagery and metaphor. I especially like the language about the wind, and I'm struck by the idea that the wind blows where it chooses. I would have thought that the wind blows where it is destined to blow. I also like the metaphor of being reborn. Having given birth to two babies, I know that birthing is hard work for the mother. I imagine it isn't any easier for the baby. The place that was once warm, secure, and comfortable has to become increasingly confining. And then nature herself requires that the baby to be pushed through an even more confining tunnel before breaking into the world. As far as we know, the baby has no choice in the matter. Birthing is also a metaphor for how our greatest joys come after a breakthrough, like receiving a newborn into our arms after the difficult struggle of giving birth. When I left my Amish community at 20 years old, I was leaving a life that had become unbearably confining. When I took this leap of faith, I had to believe that a life of my choosing would be better than the one I was leaving. I was taught to believe that God has planned our whole lives before we were born into this world. The concept of destiny fits with the deep Amish traditions that carry a person through life without the need for self-reflection or questions about whys and wherefores. I find it more empowering to believe that our life path can be determined by our choices. But then I began to wonder if there is also a divine plan for those of us who choose to live the examined life. Perhaps my father, who left the Amish and then returned, my mother, who stayed in her Amish community her whole life long, and me, leaving and choosing my life path, are all part of this divine plan. Maybe without knowing it, we follow the path that has already been marked out for each of us. I am grateful to say that the leap of faith I took when I was 20 turned out to be a time of great transformation. There is not enough time to tell you about the many joys of my life that would not have happened had I stayed in my original community. But I can tell you that there is no difference between gratitude and joy. The moments when my gratitude overflows are the same moments when I experience immense joy, usually in a breakthrough moment after a long and difficult struggle. Some say that all the choices we've made lead us to where we are today, whether by choice, by following that path that was marked out for me, or both. Today, I give thanks for this place and for all of you in this faith community of faith. Using Jesus' words, I feel I am myself born of the Spirit.
Thankful for these four testimonies of life and faith. As you observe, they were not all neat and tidy stories. Few birth stories are. I invite you to ponder what you heard in these stories and in the story of Nicodemus, and then consider what's going on in your life right now, especially in these challenging times that we live in. Do you hear an invitation from God to move from womb to world, from what is known and secure and safe right now to what is unknown, untested, and uncertain, but which may lead to life? What birth story may you be telling years from now? Peace be with you.